and welcome to Connecting the Dots. I'm both and here today with Rod Bennett is the author of The Apostasy That Wasn't, a terrific book on Constantine and the many urban legends that people believe about Constantine. Mm-hmm. And he's also the author of Chesterton's America, a fun book, looking at, as you might guess, Chesterton's America, and not simply G.K. Chesterton's America, but also also his brother Cyril. But speaking of America, Chesterton once remarked that the average American is all right. It's the ideal American that's all wrong. And we are currently living through a period in our history in which people have decided that the ideal American, well, how should I put it? As I mentioned to Rob before we came on the air, we're living today in a time where 50% of the GOP are mourning the fact that they couldn't have the candidate that they really wanted, who is Vladimir Putin. So they've had to settle
for second best.
For second best, they've had to settle for Donald Trump, who, in many ways, he embodies the values that has made Putin that great figure in Russian history that he is, and would do the things that Putin does, I think, if he had the chance. He hasn't actually made a pledge to poison his enemies with plutonium, so we can't really give him that yet. Although who knows, but he has promised to force our military to commit torture. One of the many articles that's just been flying around on the web as people sort of run around trying to figure out what to do now that we're living in a world where the GOP thought it was a great idea to nominate Donald Trump has been real worries being expressed by the military over what to do when your chain of command is headed by somebody who aspires to be a war criminal. And vows that people will do what he tells them. If he tells them to commit a war crime, they'll do it. The military has to figure out what to do in a situation like that. They haven't. There's never been a time where a politician has promised out loud that he's going to break international law and force his troops to do it. Now, that's just one of the many little problems that are following in the wake of the catastrophic decision by GOP voters to nominate an absolute buffoon.
Well, it should probably be pointed out that most of the people who have voted up to now voted for somebody other than Donald Trump.
Yep.
They split their votes.
Yep.
It was not enough to stop him. We could do a whole another program about the problems with the primary system and also all the gerrymandering that made all this.
We probably get a lot of calls from Sanders voters as well.
We may very well. It's been interesting to be all kidding aside. It's been kind of sad to watch today. I mean, there really has been an awful lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth. And, I realize that some of it comes off as a little comic to somebody a bit more wised up about party politics, but I'm not making fun. I did actually feel for the folks who woke up today and groaned to find that their nominee was Donald Trump.
Yeah. Well, and me too. I mean, the thing is that, I claim the Russian right. I'm not Russian at all. But, you know, the Russian right to laugh is kind of, that's like the only thing that you have left when you're powerless. And you realize that, and that's really it is, you know, this election has made very clear that, and it's, if anything, it's made it even clearer to Sanders supporters that our system is profoundly rigged. I mean, one of the great ironies of the Democrats in this election has been, this is the party that, you know, has constantly made noise about voter disenfranchisement. And rightly so. And yet, and this is simply typical, Sanders wins Indiana yesterday and Hillary gets 44 electoral votes and Sanders gets 43. How can Democrats not look at that and say, why bother voting? My vote, course, obviously doesn't matter.
Then, of course, there's the whole matter of the superdelegates.
Right. Sure.
I would agree with you, except to say that rigged implies that it's rigged to produce the result that the party bosses wanted. Sometimes that happens, but it did not happen this time. I don't think any of the party chiefs envisioned this or wanted it.
Wait,
with Trump.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm talking about the Democrats.
Well, but it's the same system in both parties. It's just they can't manage it as well as they'd like to. In this case, it really did fool the people who did the rigging, which, you know, in some ways is hope for democracy, I suppose.
It was fascinating. I watched an interview online, I don't know, a week or two ago, after, I think it was the Wyoming victory or something? It was some victory where Sanders had some, like, crushing margin over Hillary. And somehow she still walks away with most of the electoral votes. And some, right. You know, this guy on MSNBC is talking to some Democrat party functionary saying, how is this not a rigged system? How is this in any way reflective of the vote of the people or the will of the people here? And the guy is just kind of going, well, those are the rules. And, you know, and it was pathetic to watch this guy try to defend this. But, you know, I'm looking at, of course, in addition, we're looking at the Trump system where, embarrassingly, sure, it's true that that, you know, 50% of the parties voted for somebody else, but the reality is 50% of the party really has supported Trump, and not in bite the bullet kind of way. I mean, these are people who just, they love the fact that this guy is a racist, misogynist swine.
Well, I will say that at least some of these folks seem to be just doing it because obviously nothing they've done so far works. They're just going to toss a bomb into the system and enjoy watching it come down.
Oh, yeah. And they kind of want to watch the world burn. But, man, they're not going to like it.
It's not going to be as much fun as it sounds.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it really is like, you know, people who, you know, who cut themselves to prove the world, you know, prove something to the world, you know, except they're not cutting themselves. They're damaging everybody.
That's a fire bell in the night about our system, because it really has broken down, I believe.
Yeah.
But maybe not in quite the same way that some people think. In other words, it broke down to a large degree. Due to the fact that most people don't get involved in politics in our country until it's too late, till the bosses and the nuts that turn out in the primaries, especially the early primaries, have already done their dirty work.
Yeah,
and that's part of the problem is we now have a system that produces a sense of futility in the average person. We're lucky that they turn out in November, but the system is set up right now so that they don't get involved until November, and by then it's over with.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, you know, it's true, and I want to talk about this as the show goes on, that, you know, what we're ultimately looking at here is we're looking at the end stages of a spiritual disease, that the real problem is in the heart. The thing is that when we're looking at problems like this, you usually can't get to the roots first. First, you have to like put out the fire. That's right. The first thing that happens when your house is burning down. You could talk about how, you know, corruption within the household led people to, you know, leave the stove on and et cetera, et cetera. But have that discussion after you've called the fire department to put
that's
the fire
right. out. Yeah, yeah. I think that's a good practical instinct.
And yeah.
While we're talking about the spiritual aspect of it, I thought I might pause a minute to share another thought, talking mm-hmm. about this you know, genuine anguish that I was reading in the comments this morning after the
right.
result. It's only going to get worse. Well, Kasich has left the race now, too. So.
Oh, has he?
It's official. Yeah, that happened a couple hours ago. People are realizing, a certain kind of person, mostly pro-lifers, are realizing that this really is the end of the line for the religious right as we knew it.
Yeah.
Whatever else happens, that movement will not be the same.
Right.
And that's a mixed thing. You know, we might say that it did more harm than good. I don't know. But I will say this, that it's a little sad to watch, because I was literally seeing people in the comments reduced to just praying now for the return of Christ before November.
Yeah.
That's where they're at.
Yeah.
In other words, I had one lady in. We'll come back to it.
Well, we'll come back to it when we return. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here with Rod Bennett. We will be back right after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Mark J. And this is Connecting the Dots. And at the other end of my line is Rod Bennett. And we're talking about,
what can I say?
The noddle and the catastrophe of the GOP actually really
who'd have thunk?
Doing this insane thing that I've been afraid they were going to be dumb enough to do for the last year. If you want to join the conversation, by the way, you're welcome to do so. Please do so. Come give us a call at 1-573-4BREAD-4, 1-573-4BREAD-4. You can also text us at that number, and you can tweet us at Breadbox Media. The thing about, of course, this election is you already have a significant portion of the right that has said, under no circumstances will we ever, 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 ever support Donald Trump.
Did you hear Trump's recent answer to this?
No.
It was probably the most offensive thing he said. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
He said, "Oh yeah, I know. They say that now. We're in the middle of the battle, the boxing match right now between the candidates. But after that's over, they will not only unite around me, they'll love me. You watch."
I can practically hear the voice of the computer at the end of Colossus the Foreman Project. Yes.
Right.
In time, you will grow to love me, serve me.
He did. He said, these people will love me. You watch in a few months.
No, that's not going to happen for a lot. Well, it is going to be interesting, though, because one of the things, and this is, we're going to get into a little bit of an argument here, and that's a good thing. I think it's a foregone conclusion, A, that Hillary gets the Democratic nomination, and B, that Trump, in fact, gets the Republican nomination, that
I think that's true, too.
Okay, if that happens, then what Never Trump really means then is that you're down with Hillary going ahead and winning and crushing the GOP in November. And hopefully, if all goes well, shattering Donald Trump's campaign and grinding into the dirt every person that supports him.
Well, that's what I think is going on right now. I think the GOP is splitting, and I think it's splitting along these lines. I think there are the GOP bosses that didn't want Trump, but who are willing now, since he seems to be all the rage, they're willing to make their peace with him.
Yeah,
this is the Saruman wing of the we must join with him, Gandalf. It would be wise.
Yeah.
And so that's those guys, okay? Then there's another third, which were the people who really believed all of this stuff, all the wonky stuff about constitutional limits and fiscal responsibility, all the people that the Trump people say are so brainy and proud of the fact that they're so much smarter than we are. There really are people for whom conservatism is a theory. You know, we're talking about this is the William F. Buckley, George Will, Milton Friedman sort of wing of the thing. These people we need to watch, okay? We'll watch what they're going to do, because what they're going to do will be very interesting. Yeah. Then there's of course the last third is the Trumpers, the Trumpkins. These are the know-nothing wing of the party, for whom they never understood all that other stuff, but they knew that we need to keep out all of them damn foreigners.
Right, you know? And they're just mad as hell, and they're going to do something irrational.
That's right. Throw a bomb into it all. That's right. Okay. That's the thing. So what we're watching right now is we're watching that middle section, the people, the never Trump section of the party. And keep in mind, they have a really unique opportunity right now, as bad as this is, because think about it, their toxic know-nothing wing has voluntarily left the building.
Right, yeah.
In other words, they've got a unique opportunity to start over.
Yeah.
Now, they may have to start over in the wilderness. We don't know. That's one of the things that is yet to be seen. Mm-hmm. But right now, the problem is people are being stampeded into the Trump camp by the specter of Hillary Clinton.
Right.
And keep in mind, I absolutely agree with you. I believe that Trump and Hillary are going to be the two main nominees.
Right.
Okay. But I don't think it's by any means certain that it will come down to Hillary versus Trump, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
These principled conservatives, the never Trump crowd, okay, they're not going to be content to just vote for Hillary Clinton. And these are people who have an anguished conscience, who need somebody they can vote for in good conscience. They're looking for some place to land, okay? Mm-hmm. And I told on my blog today the story of Horace Greeley. Horace Greeley was he was an abolitionist, he was a journalist, he was one of the original founders of the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. But by 1872, the GOP that had started off so idealistic in the pre-war years was about to nominate Grant for a second term. Despite the fact that Grant's administration was and still is universally recognized as perhaps the most nakedly corrupt administration in American history. Yeah. So in 72, the more idealistic Republicans were so shocked that their party was actually going to brazenly renominate a man that had allowed so much graft, I mean proven graft, to go on under his watch, that they formed an independent group, which has come down to be known in history as the Liberal Republicans, and they nominated Horace Greeley as their alternative to Grant.
Uh-huh.
Now, keep in mind, this wasn't your typical third party candidacy. This was half or so of the Republican Party.
I love that you know all this stuff. This is great.
Well, this is the important point. They were under no illusions that Greeley could actually win.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing it in a conscious attempt to turn the GOP off of a bad road.
Mm-hmm.
And if it meant 4 years of the scary old Democrats, then so be it.
Yeah.
I mean, 4 years go by pretty quickly, but if you fundamentally ruin your party, you know, if you allow it to be co-opted by the worst people in your coalition, then you can suck wind for 20, 30, 50 years.
Yep.
Now that's what people need to realize.
Well, and that's why I've been saying. I mean, what the GOP needs to do, you know, what the Never Trump guys need to realize is that they're going to. They're going to have to not merely sit this out, but they have to actively work to destroy Trump's campaign and destroy his chance of being elected. Because if he's not elected, then okay, they can start again in 2020.
Right.
But if he wins, generations yet unborn are going to look at the GOP and say, "You gave us this guy."
Right.
He's and the never your fault.
the never Trump thing is lighted up today. The never Trump members.
Yeah.
They're very serious.
Yeah.
Keep in mind too here. I'm going to stick my neck out here and say I do expect the GOP chiefs are splitting over this, and I think that the anti-Trump faction is going to put forward an independent continuing Republican candidate here in the next few weeks.
Okay. I wonder if that's why Cruz dropped out. I wonder if he's planning.
Keep in mind, it probably should be important. It'll be important, I think, that this guy be kind of a dark horse. In other words, it can't be just seen as you're giving the loser a second chance.
Oh, okay.
More than likely, when things like this have happened in the past, they've picked somebody. Keep in mind, because they don't expect to win. And that's the beauty of the thing. In other words, how can we stop Donald Trump? All the hand-wringing. Soon as you nominate and offer these distressed anti-Trump voters a halfway reasonable alternative, the day you put his hat in the ring, Trump loses in 2016.
Mm.
You've stopped him.
Okay.
Because the conservative vote will be split.
Yeah.
Now, yes, that'll hand the next 4 years to the Clintons, but, you know, that ship has likely sailed already anyhow.
Yeah.
I mean, the Clinton machine has not even turned loose yet on Trump.
Yeah.
And the stuff that they've probably got on him would probably curl your hair.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing is that whatever that is, his base admires him for that. If we say enough bad things about Trump, then people will wake up and realize that he's a terrible human being.
If they turn up,
that he's a terrible human being.
I think there may be a bridge too far even with those folks. If it turns out that his personal Vietnam involved paying for abortions and
they won't care.
Some of them would. My point though is that all the sane people have to do is to nominate another candidate, and you've stopped Trump in his tracks.
Yeah.
Of course, you make him all the more dangerous in 2020 then, because he can say that you thwarted the will of the people, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But at least you got 4 more years to figure that out. But the upside of doing this is that you deny Trump the actual headship of the party. And it prevents him from permanently remaking it in his own image.
Well, we'll see if they're smart enough to do that. So far, you know, I mean, they have fought him as stupidly as they can.
Some of them have joined him. Some of them have joined him, but I don't expect that. Keep in mind, somebody sent Mitt Romney out to slander him for half an hour.
Yeah.
Those people are still there. Those people are still there.
Yeah, and that was a huge success. Yep. We will be back right after this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here with Rod Bennett. We're talking about the disaster that is Donald Trump, and we'll be back right after this.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here with Rod Bennett talking about the self-inflicted catastrophe that the GOP has inflicted on itself in the person of Donald Trump, a man who should never be anywhere near the White House, a racist, misogynist swine who mocks disabled people, who once took vengeance on his own infant nephew with cerebral palsy because he was in the way of some of daddy's money. This is a guy. This is a guy who is like, he's like, you know, the guy stands up in front of evangelicals and says, when I'm president, I will make Christianity powerful again. I mean, he's like a character
join
out of the
E, and I will complete your training.
Out of the Omen, for crying out loud, you know?
With our combined strength, we will end this destructive conflict and bring order to the galaxy.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, you know, gee whiz. I mean, he promises to lead Christians up to an exceeding high mountain and show them all the kingdoms of this earth and say, all this will I give you if you bow down and worship me. And the astonishing thing, of course, is that no small percentage of the people who support him are, in fact, people who claim to be Christians who are, I'm sure, in some way or another have some kind of devotion to Jesus, or at least a theory about Jesus. But for crying out loud, and this brings me to a point that I want to make. The problem, you know, we were talking earlier that there's a spiritual problem. The problem, and we're still seeing it, I'm seeing it right now from people, Hadley Arks, of all people, had an article today on the Catholic thing in which he said, well, golly, Trump is, he's an unknown quantity. Who knows?
He might be
pro-life. And it's like, no, he's not. He's made this super clear. He has made incredibly clear to pro-life people that he regards us as useful idiots, that his interest in the...
There's no ambiguity on this anymore either, by the way. I mean, he recently was held down and forced to make his position on abortion clear. And like many Democrats, even though he claims to personally dislike abortion, he came right out and said he favors no changes to the existing laws on the subject.
That's always been his real view.
Maybe there was ambiguity in the past, but he's pro-choice.
Yeah, of course he is.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he gave, you know, back in April, the Washington Post chronicled where he gave five different positions on abortion in the space of a couple of days, basically just like, well, you know, I have principles, and if you don't like them, I have others.
Well, he gives the impression of somebody who had never given the subject 10 minutes serious thought before.
Of course he hasn't. He holds, he's
clear. He's doing his thinking out loud is what he's doing, right, with the TV cameras running.
Of course he is. And that's the thing, is that for the last 30 years, the cardinal mistake that Catholic pro-life people have made is they have allowed themselves to be talked into the lie that it's abortion or the rest of the church's social teaching, but not both. And so every election year, somebody like Trump has come along and said, oh, yeah, sure, I totally care about abortion. Yeah, I really do. But, you know, in order to get my support for whatever it is you pro-life people care about, I guess it's unborn babies or something. Here, look at my precious feet pin. You're going to need to support me in my battle, and that's what it is, with the church on unjust war, torture, the death penalty, hostility to refugees, denying people a living wage. You need to get behind me on all of that,
right?
And all the rest of it, if you hope to have a place at my table.
Well,
and we have dutifully, as pro-life people, we have dutifully said yes to that for 30 years. And so you find over and over again, you find Catholics saying, the seamless garment is worthless. The seamless garment is simply a restatement of the totality of Catholic social teaching, which says not that the unborn are, that concern for the unborn is the opposite of the rest of the church's social teaching, but the concern for the unborn is obviously related to all the rest of the church's social teaching. And we've allowed that compromise again and again for 30 years. And the end point is Donald Trump.
Well, I mean, think about it. Donald Trump has clarified it for us now. Both candidates are pro-choice now.
Absolutely.
So the dilemma over all of this has been taken away for this year.
Yeah,
they're both pro-choice.
And yet, I am still hearing today from passionate, misinformed Catholics who are saying you have to vote for Donald Trump because look, he just hired some guy who says that he's pro-life, and you know, and that proves that you can believe everything Trump says. And it's like, I mean, talk about Lucy in the football and Charlie Brown again. You're going to fall for this guy again. Yeah. But that's it. Is we've bought into this notion that when a GOP candidate, when a ostensibly pro-life candidate, promises, you know, fingers the precious feet pin on his lapel and says something about the unborn, that it's fine for us to adopt what we always call a prudential judgment, in which we defy the church's teaching on a dozen other issues, on the theory
never that noticing how similar this is to cafeteria Catholicism.
That's exactly what it is. It's cafeteria Catholicism. And we say, well, that's not a dogmatic teaching of the church. So what? That doesn't matter at all. What it is it's the obviously sound, obviously wise counsel of the church. And here's the thing. Doing that, what we've done is close off not only the pro-life position, but a great many people, the faith itself, to people of goodwill who are really bothered in conscience, because they should be bothered in conscience by quote unquote pro-life support for torture, for unjust war, for oppression of the weak, for you know, the death penalty and all the rest of it. What the obvious and smart thing to do, if we were really serious, the paradox of calling abortion a core non-negotiable issue for much of the pro-life movement, especially the pro-Trump quote-unquote pro-life movement, is that if you really want to make the case that abortion is your core issue, then what you do is you agree with the church on all that other stuff. Just agree with the church. Say, yeah, you know, the church is right. We should get rid of the death penalty, and you know, we do.
And if you can't feel it right now, then have a little faith in your own fallibility.
Well, have some faith. Exactly, have some faith in your own fallibility, and then by all means, devote all of your energy to fighting abortion. But what really happens, and Trump is going to bring this to the fore in a huge way, what really happens is that people who call themselves pro-life then spend huge amounts of energy fighting the church. We need to fight the church on the death penalty. We need to oppose the church on a living wage. We need to stop the church on, you know, its teaching in Laudato Si. We need to, you know, focus our energy on doing down this, you know, this liberal pope and all the rest of it. That's where all the real energy goes. It doesn't go to abortion. And that's the problem. That's you know, spiritually, that's the issue, is where is our docility to the faith? Where is our trust that that when the church speaks, she has some real wisdom for us? And yeah, sure, it may be a threat to GOP priorities, but who cares?
Right.
When did the GOP become our magisterium, you know?
Well, they're about finished now anyway, so.
Indeed. And good riddance.
Well, at least in its current form. Like I say, I can at least sympathize. I'm not necessarily describing how to save the GOP with any of this. I'm just asking how one might save the never Trump wing of the old GOP as a force in national politics. Should
desire
to do that.
I want the sane people, you know, to climb out of the rubble.
I mean, let's face it. There's going to be a conservative party in this country. There are a lot of people who feel that way. The question is it going to be healthy or toxic? And well, like I say, there's a great opportunity right now. Like I say, since the toxic wing has voluntarily left.
Right. Well, much of it depends on what are you trying to conserve, and that's really it for me. I mean, I always considered myself a conservative because I'm a Catholic and I believe in conserving the Western tradition. That is no longer what the GOP is about. And the proof of that is Donald Trump. And so, you know, those people who still believe in conserving the Western tradition, there's this whole body of teaching. We call it Catholic social teaching. There could be a real guide here. Have already done the homework. You don't have to reinvent this wheel. Go and learn it. And that's we could do something really good out of this disaster. But that's where it starts. Take a good hard look at Catholic social teaching. Because by the way, Catholic social teaching is for anybody. We'll be back right after this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here with Rod Bennett. We'll be back.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
And welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We are here today with Rod Bennett. We're talking about the predicament that we find ourselves in. My basic counsel to anybody still tempted to buy the lie that the GOP is anything other than a seductive and corrupting force in Catholic life is just, you know, as Paul says, come out from them and be separate. Touch no unclean things, says the Lord, and I will receive you. And I think that that's really it. People say, why are you so hard on the GOP? What about the Democrats? Well, you know, I can say, if you want, I can write abortion is bad 100 times on the chalkboard. And I can say, gay marriage is ontologically impossible. I can write that 100 times on the chalkboard. Good. Have we established that I do agree with the church on both abortion and gay marriage and the other so-called non-negotiables? Great. But here's the thing. I don't know anybody who calls themselves a quote-unquote faithful conservative Catholic who listens to a Nancy Pelosi and says, she's making a lot of sense. I'm going to follow what she says, and I will, I will follow her. But I run into quote-unquote faithful conservative Catholics every day who talk as though the GOP is the real magisterium, and we really got to keep our eye on that Pope. Because he's a menace to the faith. I see this all the time, and I have run into a great many Catholics. People say, I don't know anybody who's supporting Trump. Well, somebody is. 50% of the GOP is. The guy is the front runner of the Republican Party, and we're already seeing, a day after he wins Indiana, we're already seeing people like Hadley Arks saying, maybe we can vote for this guy.
Yep. Bobby Jindal today also.
Yeah,
if you don't hold your nose and vote for Trump, then you're helping Hillary.
Yeah, well, and that's true, but you know what? Who cares? So what?
Hillary, as I was saying earlier, Hillary is about 4 years. Trump is for good.
Yeah.
This is a turning point. You permanently change the party.
Right. Yes.
And that's the difference.
And you inflict, which is far more important, you inflict a grievous wound on the witness of both the pro-life movement and, you know, the special boast that conservative Catholics have made for years and years and years is we're not cafeteria Catholics. We accept the teaching, the whole teaching of the church. Well, guess what? That's gone.
Yep.
If you support this guy, forget it. I mean, don't talk to me about how seriously you take the church's teaching, because you're willing at this point with Trump, who holds exactly the same views of abortion that Hillary Clinton does. You're willing to throw away everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And for what? So that the GOP has a victory in 2016? It profits a man nothing.
Right. Right.
to gain the whole world and lose his own soul. But for GOP 2016?
Right.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Get
yeah.
it. Yeah. Yeah. So as for me and my house, I am sticking with Jesus Christ and the teaching of the church. And there is no way that I'm going to support Donald Trump. And yes, I recognize that means giving Hillary the win. And you know what? Cardinal Ratzinger has said that it is legitimate for a Catholic not in order to support the evil policies that a candidate advocates, but in order to, you know, lessen the impact of even greater evils.
Mm-hmm.
to support the candidate who will do less damage. And well,
go ahead.
Well, one of the things that I'm constantly hearing is they're just as bad. It's just not objectively true. Trump is going to be a catastrophe. Hillary's going to be a competent, corrupt Nixonian bureaucrat.
We know exactly what she's going to be like, because we're getting two presidents for the price of one.
Right.
We had 8 years of Bill Clinton, and Bill Clinton will probably be the brains behind this operation too.
Well, they're both, they're going to surround themselves with exactly the same people, and we'll see similar results.
We know what it'll be like. It's not going to be the apocalypse.
Right. But, that's not endorsing her. It's simply
absolutely not.
That Cardinal Ratzinger basically says, if you're doing this not to support Hillary's evil policies, but to try to lessen the evil of Trump, that is a legitimate option. I'm not going to take that option. I'm going to vote for Joe Schreiner, but I will not condemn any Catholic who feels bound in conscience to support her in order to defeat him. Ratzinger says it's fine. I'm not going to argue with him,
We've talked a little bit about the Catholic end of things. I thought that it might be worthwhile to spend just a minute or two in the last couple of minutes we've got here to think about how it plays for the for our separated brethren. I mean this in a genuinely sympathetic way, but I've always thought that the evangelical churches especially have used GOP politics, Republican politics, and Americanism as a sort of a stand-in for the church.
Mm-hmm.
Because, think about it. If you're a member of a small little sect, that used to be pretty easy back in the 1890s. I mean, if you grew up Lutheran in South Dakota and everybody you knew, as far as the eye could see in every direction, was Lutheran, it was pretty easy to believe that Lutheranism was the one true faith. But as we got more and more pluralistic, especially in these days of Facebook, etc., it became more and more obvious that evangelicalism is a loose aggregate of little sects. And in order to lessen the horror of that, they found a substitute, I think, in the idea. And I can speak from personal, I used to be an evangelical Christian. Mm-hmm. from personal experience that that I did use the America is a Christian nation, and we're all going to reunite in the land of the free, where everybody's free, religiously free, and we, you know, we have our differences, but we're all basically united around the central message and around good old Christian nation America. And with the end, but you know, recently with the gay marriage decision in the Supreme Court and now the Trump nomination, it's, I think it's become apparent to everybody that as a substitute for the anything like Catholicity, the idea of a larger vision of who we are other than just one little group who all see it one particular way, has been shaken very deeply, which partially explains the anguish, I think, that a lot of people are feeling as the end of this is coming. It's apocalyptic to them. It's not just the end of a political party. It's the end of an attempt to, I don't even know what you call it, a construct for helping to keep you your vision of the Christian faith sound. So I hope if we have any evangelical listeners, you won't see this as jumping up and down and celebrating. I don't feel that way at all. But I do want you, I hope you will consider the idea that you need to look back at history and find out if there's a better vision of Catholicity, right, some better way that Christians are all united other than the fact that we all vote for the Republican candidate.
Right.
And I think that maybe this is a learning moment for Catholics and evangelicals together. The idol has failed.
Right.
And there may be something salvageable out of it, but the idol has failed. And this, I think, is, people are feeling.
You know, Chesterton wasn't far off the mark at all when he said that America is a nation with the soul of a church, and it has always been a temptation for American Christians to identify the U.S. with, you know, with the church or with Israel or, you know, something like this. I mean, it's in the DNA of our country. We started as a Puritan experiment, you know, a city on a hill, and it basically in an attempt to refound the church. And it's always been a mistake. And it's always been something that is deeply tempting for us. It can result in good things. When we attempt something of high and noble purpose, but man, it can also result in just desperately evil things.
If any of our friends are wondering what practically to do in the wake of what happened yesterday, yeah, my own personal advice would be go find Horace Greeley.
Okay.
We need the best way to pull a good outcome out of this is to run a candidate that principled conservatives can vote for. Yeah. Not necessarily saying I would vote for him, but that principled conservatives can vote for. And you've dealt with the Donald Trump problem, at least for this year.
Yeah. Yep. Well, anyway, thank you so much, Rod, for being on the show today. You've been listening to Connecting the Dots here on Breadbox Media. Our producer was Ethan Bolin. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and I'll be back tomorrow with Chris Franklin. Till then, have a lovely evening. Bye-bye.
So long, everybody.